Hi, I'm Rachel Michelle Wilson. I'm a children's book author and illustrator, and I'd rather sit at the kid table than anywhere else.
You can sit with me. You can sit with me. You can sit with me at the kid table.
This week, I'm sitting at the kid table with children's book author-illustrator Maurice Sendak. You probably know him for his beloved Caldecott Award-winning book, Where the Wild Things Are, but you might not know that he was obsessed with death, to the point his friends teased him about it, he hated book signings, he had a reputation for being a lovable curmudgeon, and he was Stephen Colbert's favorite interview of all time on The Colbert Report. So, let's get to know him a little more, shall we? I love Maurice Sendak because Where the Wild Things Are has always been a huge inspiration for me. As a kid growing up in an unsafe emotional environment, he gave me a safe space to express myself. My wildness, my anger, all while knowing that someone was waiting for me at home with dinner and it was still hot. A gift of love and true acceptance from the story to me. I decided to do this deep dive research because I wanted to understand what inspired Sendak to take such emotional risks on the page, especially at a time when there weren't many books representing imperfect moms and angry kids. My research led me to discover many things that informed his work, including a difficult childhood, an obsession with death, and a commitment to tell the truth to kids. In his own curmudgeonly way, he was a fierce advocate for children as whole people with complicated, intense emotional experiences. I felt that respect as a kid when I read his books, and I hope to offer that respect now as I make books for kids. So, who is Maurice Sendak? I found this really interesting quote from him where he said, "It was the awareness at a very early age of mortality which pervaded my soul and provided me with the basic ingredients of being an artist." So basically, he often said that without his difficult childhood, he didn't believe that he would become the creator he was. And so it seemed like a part of him was grateful for it, but it was very, very difficult. And I think an understanding of his childhood definitely helps and helped me understand his books and his life and him better as a person. Maurice Sendak was born June 10th, 1928 in Brooklyn, New York. He was named after the doctor who helped his mom when he was born. His family called him Murray. His parents were Jewish-Polish immigrants who were working to bring their families over. His father was a tailor, which actually later influenced Sendak to design costumes. But overall, he had a difficult relationship with his parents. This is what he said about it. "There was no art to child life in my family. They couldn't figure out life at all. My mom shouldn't have had children. She didn't care for children." Sendak's father described him as a happy baby, coming out almost laughing like a little bell. Sendak later said, "What a start. What a good beginning. What a hopeful sign that was. What did they do? Break the bell?" So you can tell he had a very difficult relationship with his parents. But despite that, he loved his sister and brother, and he called them his chosen parents. They gave him books and enriched his life with creativity, including these dynamic wooden toys that they made together, which Sendak had in his studio all throughout his life. And creativity helped him survive all the difficulty of his childhood. Sendak was often sick and spent most time indoors, observing other children's lives through the window. This later influenced his books, which were full of windows and movie-like frames. He also spent a lot of time reading comics and drawing, and he especially loved Mickey Mouse. Self-described as a rigid kid, he was often in a state of fear and anxiety. But he basically said in all the quotes that I read from him that confronting fear and death at an early age definitely gave him a deep respect for children. When he started attending school, he found it uncomfortable. "Nearly every morning in order to get there, I had to talk myself out of a state of panic," he said. "I couldn't stand being cloistered with other children, and I was usually so embarrassed that I stammered." He was scared of his mom's vacuum cleaner, to the point that he had to go to the neighbor's house when it was in use. He also watched Invisible Man, which according to him made him an insomniac for the rest of his life, as no one could prove the Invisible Man wasn't lurking. As a fellow insomniac, I can definitely relate to that, although mine wasn't caused by Invisible Man. Overall, what scared him more than anything was actually death. He was forced to confront mortality at a very young age. So some of these things that I'm going to describe are pretty traumatic. Like, his father told him he was an accident baby and that they had tried to abort him using toxic things because they couldn't afford him. And he heard that at, like, age 3. And then, whenever he would get sick, his parents often would just bluntly say that he could die. So he said, I think a lot of children are afraid of death, but I was afraid because I heard it around me. I was very ill. I had scarlet fever. My parents were afraid I wouldn't survive. And he said they weren't afraid to tell him the truth about things, like that he could die. And then later on, he became obsessed with the Lindbergh baby kidnapping after seeing a graphic newspaper image at age 2. And he realized bad things could happen to anyone and said that all these things, and especially the Lindbergh baby kidnapping, he said, it invested me in children forever. Later on, this experience would influence his book, Outside Over There, if you've read that one. As his parents saved money, they were able to bring over most of Sendak's mom's family out of Europe. But by the time they started trying to help his dad's, it was impossible to get his Jewish family out of Europe. The entire extended family was tragically killed in the concentration camps. Because of this, Sendak's parents carried a lot of guilt, and Sendak explained that, in not knowing how to handle it, they took it out on their children. Sendak also carried personal guilt with him from a tragedy that happened to his childhood friend, whom he witnessed run into traffic to retrieve a ball. Though his friend's mom expressed that the death wasn't his fault, Sendak carried the experience with him his entire life, and even into his 80s, he struggled to talk about it. As an adult, Sendak was teased by friends about how often he talked about death. But when you see the events of his life all laid out like that, you can understand why he carried death with him everywhere. These experiences shaped the way he lived, the way he created, and the way he thought about childhood. Okay, so let's move from childhood to the young adult years. He worked at a toy store and took art classes at night as a teenager slash young adult, and his first jobs also included textbook illustrations and window dressing, where he was introduced to children's book editor Ursula Nordstrom. And if you don't know who Ursula Nordstrom is, I highly recommend looking her up. She was one of the most prominent and influential editors in like the golden age of children's books, basically all your favorite classics. She probably edited them. And about her, Sendak said, she made me who I am. She gave me a book every year. She kept me working. Can you imagine? Mentorship from a publishing house. She intended that I should be an important illustrator. Later on in his career, when Sendak was experiencing self-doubt, Nordstrom replied to him, you may not be Tolstoy, but Tolstoy wasn't Sendak either. You have a vast and beautiful genius. Under her mentorship, eventually Sendak was able to quit his other jobs and work on children's books full time. Now we get into his adult years, where he made many award-winning books that forever changed the children's book industry. At first, he illustrated others' books only and developed a reputation as an incredible artist. Then he started writing his own books and in 1963 won a Caldecott Medal for his well-known classic picture book, Where the Wild Things Are. Over the course of his 60-year career, he made over 150 books and sold more than 50 million copies in 40 languages. He won many awards, like the Hans Christian Andersen Award, the Laura Ingalls Wilder Award, the National Medal of Arts, 7 Caldecott Honors, and a National Book Award, and more. During that time, in addition to making books, Sendak also designed costumes and sets for operas and ballets. And I actually just moved to Washington and was able to go to the Nutcracker. And this was part of the reason why I started, you know, I wanted to research Sendak, because I had no idea that he designed costumes until I read the playbook before the show. And it mentioned him as the previous set designer. So I thought that was pretty cool. He also wrote the lyrics for the musical animated production of his book, Really Rosie, in collaboration with the singer Carole King. You can actually look that one up on YouTube. It's pretty fun. Later, he was credited as a producer for the movie version of Where the Wild Things Are, and he worked really closely with Jim Henson Studios on the character design of this. Sendak maintained a very private personal life overall. During much of his career, he had a 50-year partnership with psychoanalyst Eugene David Glynn, who worked primarily with youth. They enjoyed reading books, traveling, and listening to music together. Sendak explained in a few interviews that being a gay man in children's books felt dangerous and created a lot of anxiety for him. It was something you hid, he said. I must have been 19 or 20 when it became obvious to me. And in other interviews, he said, I didn't want to be gay. It was yet another sign of isolation, and I was worried that the knowledge, if it were to come out, would ruin my career. Sendak never told his parents, but eventually came out publicly in 2008. Sendak never really wanted kids of his own, except maybe once, in his life and expressed many times that he was glad he didn't so he could devote himself to his art. He did have a beloved dog named Jenny, who was featured in many of his books, and a German Shepherd named Herman, named after Melville, that kept him company after Eugene passed away in 2007. Sendak never stopped learning. He expressed that the only time he felt true happiness was creating books. He continued learning from his muses, making books, and finding inspiration until he passed away in 2012 at the age of 83 after suffering a stroke. In one of the last interviews with him that I listened to, which I highly recommend, I'll put it in the show notes, there are a few quotes that really touched me. He was talking with his interviewer who had been his interviewer before and who he'd gotten to know over the years. And he said to her, "Almost certainly I'll go before you go, so I won't have to miss you." And I just thought that was so sweet and so sad. And he said, "I'm a happy old man, but I will cry my way to the grave." And I feel like that quote describes Maurice Sendak perfectly of this. He was overall like sometimes a sad, cranky person, but then he had this happiness and joy and lightness to him. And that's what makes him so fascinating to me, is this combination of childlike happiness with his kind of adult sadness. One of my favorite quotes from that interview was he said, "There are so many beautiful things in the world which I will have to leave when I die, but I'm ready, I'm ready, I'm ready." So that was one of the last interviews before he passed away, and I thought that was really touching and wanted to share it. So now I wanted to talk to you just a little bit about Where the Wild Things Are. I found some super interesting facts about it as I researched him. This book was originally called Where the Wild Horses Are until Sendak realized he couldn't actually draw horses. He chose the word things, Where the Wild Things Are, because he could draw anything and no one could critique him for not drawing it right, which I thought was hilarious. He actually felt like before that point he had illustrated a bunch of books, but he didn't feel like his style has solidified until this book. He said his influences melded together in a way that became more him, and that was the first time, and that's why that book was special to him. One of the reasons. The wild things themselves were based on his Jewish relatives, who often said things to him like, "You're so cute, I could eat you up," which kind of scared him. About the book, he said, "How many people have a 5-year-old child care for their fathers all through his life? That kid in the silly wool suit has made my life pleasurable. Not many people have children who are so financially dependable, which has allowed me to invest in all kinds of experimental work. One should be happy to have one book like that." I thought that was an adorable way to talk about his character as taking care of him. Lots of people asked him to do a second book, and he found that the most boring idea imaginable, and had some other hilarious things to say about that in his interview with Stephen Colbert, which I also linked and highly recommend. "The fun of that book," he said, "is a perilous tightrope of a little boy very vulnerable to these huge creatures and the absurdity of his having control of them by staring into their yellow eyes. It's what every child would like, to have control over such things. Kids are not afraid of them because Max is not afraid of them." He said, "I think Max is my truest creation. Like all kids, he believes in a world where a child can skip from fantasy to reality in the conviction that both exist." I love that so much. And I found lots of more facts about his books, and I included them in a blog post on my website, so you can feel free to check that out. I left a link in the show notes to that as well. And then to finish this part one episode, I wanted to give you some of my favorite funny anecdotes that I found as I researched him. Again, I know I've mentioned this multiple times, but he had an interview with Stephen Colbert on the Colbert Report. It's irreverent and witty and curmudgeonly, and it's like one of the best interviews of all time. I included part one and part two, so definitely watch that. I didn't know this, but Sendak actually hated signing books because he thought it was social nonsense, and he often unintentionally made kids cry because they didn't understand who he was or why he was drawing all over their books when he was signing them. He shares this experience of one time where a kid yelled, "Don't crap up my book!" And instead of getting mad about it or like weird about it, Sendak ended up talking to the father to make sure the father wouldn't get mad at the child. And then he called the kid courageous and said, "It was the bravest cry I've ever heard. I nearly wept." So you can just tell he really does understand children deeply and respect their feelings. Later on, after Where the Wild Things, one kid wrote him a letter and said, "Dear Mr. Sendak, how much does it cost to get to Where the Wild Things are? If it is not expensive, my sister and I would like to spend the summer there." And then the last little anecdote, a little boy sent me a charming card, he said, with a little drawing on it. I loved it. I answer all my children's letters, sometimes very hastily, but this one I lingered over. I sent him a card and I drew a picture of a wild thing on it. I wrote, "Dear Jim, I loved your card." Then I got a letter back from his mother and she said, "Jim loved your card so much, he ate it." That to me was one of the highest compliments I've ever received. He didn't care that it was an original Maurice Sendak drawing or anything. He saw it, he loved it, he ate it. Thanks for sitting with me at the kid table. For bonus content and episode notes, you can go to rachelmichellewilson.substack.com. A huge thanks to Whiskey Geraldine for our music, and Joanna Roland, Marietta Apollonio, and Angela Pham Kranz for sponsoring this episode. Until next time, I'll save you a seat right next to me.